It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Anchorage is a unique city where you can live a totally urban lifestyle, but get into the alpine high country within an hour from anywhere you might find yourself. Somehow, it can be easy to forget how close we are to the stress relief of a hike. So we're going to try to remind you. Today's show is a trail guide on the radio. We're going to talk about favorite hikes and how to get there for the weekend or just after work. Our only limitation is you have to be able to do it in a day or less, starting from Anchorage. And I've got three terrific guests who know a ton about trails, and I'm looking forward to it because it's one of my favorite topics as well. John Wolfe is an author. He wrote the classic book, 55 Ways to the Wilderness in South Central Alaska, along with some other people. Thanks for being with us, John.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And Blaine Smith is with Chugach State Park, I guess officially a park specialist, but he's in charge of taking care of the trails. Thanks for being with us, Blaine.
Yeah, thanks.
And from Chugach National Forest, Paul Clark, who is the trails program manager for the entire forest. Paul, thanks for being here.
Thanks for inviting me to join.
So this is going to be an open discussion, sharing and debate, and our topic is pretty open. And what I thought would be interesting is maybe start with sort of easy flat trails, and where you could take some toddlers and relax, short hike, and then we could sort of work our way up to the more challenging trails. And so as I was thinking about, okay, if I was going to recommend a really easy level trail around Anchorage that's also like a beautiful trail and a beautiful walk, I was thinking maybe the Turnagain Arm Trail, starting from the south end of Potter Marsh. I mean, it's really pretty easy, pretty wide. Any other nominations, John? Would you go with that, or do you have another suggestion?
I would definitely. That springs to mind as a good one. That's it seems like a flat trail because it parallels the highway and the inlet. It does have some grades in it, particularly right off the bat out of Potter Marsh. But yeah, it's overall that's a good flat trail, flat-ish trail, and you can go pretty far on it or you can go pretty short, suit yourself.
Not a loop, though. You have to go out and back unless you pre-position the car down at McHugh Creek.
Right.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts is that part from Windy Corner back towards Rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
That is, and the cool thing about that trail is it puts us into into the historic perspective about Anchorage, is where when trails were the thing around here. And so the Turnagain Arm Trail, of course, was used to construct the railroad, and it was used to haul freight, link up to Indian Pass, which was a pretty popular pass during the gold rush days.
So it was like a wagon road.
Yeah. And there's, photos that you can find of, and you can still find artifacts along the way. So, and you can see the road cut. So, picturing yourself with a freight sled, a lot of dogs out in front of you. It's a pretty cool trail.
Yeah, it's kind of wide and flat, and I guess it makes sense it was a roadbed.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, are you on with that one, Paul, or you have another suggestion?
Oh, that's an excellent trail, and it's probably one of the ones with the shortest drive to get there from main urban Anchorage, and is an excellent trail for hiking, trail running, and other activities.
Yeah, so I think there's actually a race that goes on down there annually, a foot race. And so then you can pop off at a couple of different spots. I don't exactly know how long it is. You guys probably know like where the different spots where you can get off the trail.
Well, you named Potter right off the bat. And so then after that, it'd be McHugh Creek. And then after that, it'd be Rainbow. And then after that, it'd be Windy Corner.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it ends?
Yeah, that's where it's. I mean, the trail actually does go beyond that, and you can find it. But it's not cleared beyond there. So.
Okay. And then the McHugh Peak Trail branches off of the Turnagain Arm Trail, right? I mean, if you want to do something quite challenging.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, yeah, going up much more uphill and up into the alpine, which is a nice, change from the forested trail, which is more along the arm. So, yeah, and that goes up to McHugh Lake and can go to Rabbit Lake and connect out on a point-to-point to the Rabbit Lake Trailhead. Clark's Road, is that what it is?
Canyon.
Canyon Road, yeah.
Yeah.
Wrong road.
So back on the Turnagain Arm Trail, it's mostly cottonwood trees, which I guess is probably because it was disturbed land at some point.
Yeah, cottonwood, alder, and devil's club mostly.
Nice terrain to have a trail through.
There's some beautiful spruce.
Yeah, there's spruce and birch, and it's a little combination of everything, and nice views off cliff tops. And
there's some nice little windows that open up over the Turnagain Arm, too, when you walk down there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's one of our earliest trails to open because it's got all that southern exposure. And then the other thing that it provides is a lot of wildlife encounters, because early in the season is where the moose like to calve, and so that brings some of our bear populations, you know, in there. So we usually have bear sightings along that trail early in the season.
Is mountain biking permitted along there?
No.
Is mountain biking permitted on any of the state park trails?
Yes. Yes, there, and it's on a year-by-year basis. So we open different trails just to kind of see, you know, gauge public reaction as to, you know, how that's going to be accepted on that particular trail. And then it's also resource protection-based. We don't open any trails that can't take it. And then it's also timing based. There are some trails that'll take it, but not until they dry out. So
what about in the national forest, just in general, on mountain biking?
Sure. Well, let me set the stage first on the just where the Chugach National Forest is.
Sure, we're assuming everybody knows their geography, right?
Because it can certainly be a bit confusing with all the wonderful public lands we have in the area. So often it's easy to get confused between Chugach State Park and Chugach National Forest. And so in terms of the national forest, it's 5.4 million acres stretching all the way from Girdwood to Cordova to Valdez and on down to Seward, Cooper Landing. And so in talking about day trips, it can be a very wide-ranging conversation, as there's day trips from a variety of locations.
Right. We're talking from Anchorage.
Sure. Yeah, so. That helps focus it in.
I was thinking our limitation would probably be Hope. You know, what you could do, you could drive to Hope and do one of those trails, but you probably couldn't do too much beyond that on a reasonable day trip.
Sure, sure. And I'm happy that helps me focus
There's,
you know, 520 miles of trail total that we manage.
Wow.
Summer and winter trails combined. So what I would start with, especially for the family outing where, you know, small children or really a range of opportunities for all different abilities would be Portage Valley. In both summer and winter, it's a very popular destination. And within Portage Valley, we have the 4-mile Trail of Blue Ice, which meanders along the Portage Highway, paralleling the road with just some stunning views of glaciers and some really amazing woodwork, boardwalks and bridges.
I was going to say, I think that's like the most well-made trail in the whole region. I mean, the boardwalks are amazing.
It really is, to me, a work of art.
Yeah.
And so that's the part of the experience is just enjoying the actual trail itself.
And it's one of those ones where I think Anchorage residents ought to go down and check it out, because it's probably 95% tourists. Agreed? You're skeptical about that.
I'm skeptical. All right. I think it is a destination. We certainly want to promote it, encourage more people to go enjoy Portage Valley, because it's not too far away.
But it's one of these things that, as an Anchorage resident, you forget about it. You don't drive by, and it's not at top of mind that you could go there, and it would be really cool. But people from outside are always going there. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And so with the Trail of Blue Ice, there's several access points, including Moose Flats. So once you turn on to the road to Whittier, the Portage Highway, it's about 1 mile from the intersection with Seward Highway. And it goes for about 4 miles, very easy terrain, mostly flat and wide. So real range of abilities will enjoy that.
You could probably
trail.
Even do it if you're disabled, and I would think.
I would think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's some loose gravel, but you know, the access points also out of Willowa and Black Bear Campground, as well as at the Bagotch Bogs Visitor Center. So the Trail of Blue Ice, in a way, is access to a number of opportunities, from the educational experiences at the Visitor Center, to the overnight experiences as well, but also, you know, a 4 mile, a one way, 8 mile round trip day hike, and bicycles are allowed. And and I've seen used pretty often, and in the winter. So it's a skiing destination as well for a nice cross country ski. Being aware of the avalanche slide paths, as well as Portage Lake, has become increasing popular for
especially in the springtime during the cross skiing,
skate skiing. And
my thing is about Portage Valley is that I'm always cold whenever I'm there. You know, you really got to wear a sweater and a windbreaker because the wind just always is blowing there.
Well, Charles, it's not always blowing, but it does have a reputation for being a bit, as we say, wet, windy, and wild.
That Whittier Portage pressure difference, right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I can remember an awesome day on the very nearby Byron Glacier Trail, which is another very short and easy trail, really good for families. And it's I can remember just a glorious sunny day with no wind, and you know you can be walking. You get in there, one of the attractions is that snow there probably almost all summer, depending how far up you go. and so you can be playing in the snow in your t-shirt and shorts, and kids love that.
That
and lots
so
of
fun
rocks to throw in streams. And
you get to go somewhere, which is one thing about trail hiking, especially with kids, but for anybody, if you get to a destination, it's more fun. That would be my one demerit for the Kernaghan Arm Trail. It's like you never know when to turn around because you don't really get anywhere, you know. In the Byron Glacier Trail, it's very much that way. Here, you made it. You can turn around and go back.
Yeah, and even it, though, I don't think has a, you know, there's not like a summit that you get to that's a clear turnaround, right? You can go and climb Byron Peak from there, or you can turn around after going just to, you know, to the first stream crossing or something. And
as long as we're in that neck of the woods, I want to mention what I think is probably my kid's favorite trail, which is the Glacier Creek, Winter Creek Trail. It goes from behind the hotel and in Girdwood. Again, very well-made trail. The first part of it has been fixed up to a point that I would imagine some people might say it's too fixed up with all that gravel and everything, but then it turns sort of back more into a regular trail, and then you get back to the T, and as you turn left, you can go down to that great aerial tram that goes across Winter Creek. Or is that Great Glacier
Creek? It's going across Glacier Creek.
Glacier Creek, okay.
Right. But it's right near the confluence of the two.
Right.
And you cross the gorge, which is, the Winter Creek Gorge is what you cross on a footbridge still. And,
right,
and
I got you. Which is also really, really beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And going across the hand-operated tram is scary. Period. I mean, because you're way up in the air, and you're, you know, and you know, the kids have to sort of get their courage up to get on it, and you know, then you pull yourself across, and that's amazing. And it's one of these things that I think of as being so Alaskan. You know, when you go to the national parks and you go outdoor places outside, there's always signs everywhere: don't do this, be careful, don't fall, don't do, you know. Here we are in Alaska. Here's an aerial tram. Just get in, and go right.
Well, there's a few differences that way. You know, sometimes you're surprised by the national park system where they've got, if you've ever been to Zion and hiked Angel's Landing.
Oh, that is terrifying.
Yeah, you can't imagine that this would exist in America. So every once in a while,
let's just make sure people know it's a fin that goes, a fin of rock that goes out into the canyon. It's probably a 1,000-foot vertical drop. And the only thing that keeps you on it is a chain.
Well,
and I actually hiked it.
That you have to hang on to. It's not a barrier. You have to hang on to the chain.
Right. I was up there, and there was a group. I was just telling the story the other day. There's a group of four young people, and one of the women had obviously had a total breakdown of just like was not moving, and a little stream of liquid leading away from her down the hill.
Oh,
it's like, worst case scenario, don't go to such a scary place. But I mean, these trams are not like that scary. They're safe, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's so, you know, on this kind of safe and unsafe kind of, you know, subject, I believe that we're super fortunate in this state to have access to, you know, real wilderness, real outdoors, where we're not at the top of the food chain. There's rivers to cross. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we end up dealing with. Weather and you know, obstacles, and I think we're pretty fortunate that way, that we can, you know, exist in a place like that. So You know, the tram is kind of one level of safety, but then we've
so
got
is that a state
Eagle
park
River
or national forest.
That's a national forest.
Oh, it is?
Trail.
Okay.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. The tram's national forest.
I'm just curious before we get off of that, and just thinking about the what I feel is a slightly different culture in Alaska about willingness to accept risks. Do national forest attorneys sit around worrying about this kind of stuff, or is it like it's there and we just go with it?
Well, that's a big and complex question.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we certainly are always aware of mm-hmm. safety on for ourselves as mm-hmm. as employees and for visitors as mm-hmm. well. At the same time, it's meant to be an adventure, and you know, we try to help with providing as much information as possible. So. Mm-hmm. So visitors to the forest know what to expect and are as prepared as possible, whether it's wildlife encounters or the changing weather in Portage Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And we leave it at that. So we, you know, do what we can. If it's a boardwalk, you know, we'll do inspections and inventories on our trail. But we leave a lot of the responsibility to the person that's headed out there.
Yeah.
It's
somehow
their adventure.
It seems to be working, and I'm glad. I'm encouraging. I think you've got the right mix. Well, I got so into the conversation, I didn't tell people what we're talking about. I'm supposed to do that periodically. The show is Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about day hiking in the Chugach and beyond, day hiking around Anchorage. You were just hearing from Paul Clark, who's the Trails Program Manager for Chugach National Forest. Blaine Smith is park specialist, lead of the trails in Chugach State Park, and John Wolf, author of 55 Ways to the Wilderness in South Central Alaska, which is the classic trail guide. John, I want to finish up with the easy hikes here, but I think it's also necessary to mention that really, even within the bowl, there are some great places to go on short, easy hikes. One that I think is a great place to take kids is the Coastal Refuge out beyond Kincaid, where you can walk a long gravel beach there, and it is kind of adventurous. Mm-hmm. The Campbell Tract has some good trails in it, so you don't really have to go too far.
Yeah, and I keep thinking that there needs to be a 55 ways to Anchorage itself, mm-hmm. because there are lots and lots of things to do, you know, that go from the paved trails to the prepared gravel trails to the informal gravel trails and moose paths that are just right here in town and in the Chester Creek Green Belt, and like you said, Kincaid Park and sort of the lower hillside area. I particularly like that one you just talked about at Kincaid Park, where you can do a loop across the coastal bluff top, mm-hmm. and connect with the coastal the bottom of that same bluff and make a loop out of the motocross sand dune area.
Yeah, check out the sand dunes for sure.
And check out the sand dunes while you're there. And we don't have very many sand dunes, so it's kind of cool in itself.
But that's a really fun one. I mean, a lot of people think that you go to hike, they immediately think of Glen Alps, and that's sort of our crowd issue up there. But it is a fabulous place to go because you can drive right to the Alpine, have the great views and so forth.
Definitely.
Loved to death, do you think? Overused?
Well, certainly you could make an argument that that flat top and the immediate environs are overused, and I don't know if you could say it's overused, or if you could say that the state parks probably just don't have enough funding to keep up with the use and to keep the trail totally intact as it probably best would be. That said, I've thought many times that, you know, we can complain about erosion and problems, but my gosh, what a perfect thing we have there, and to have that as that accessible a place to get to the Alpine and get on a mountain so easily. It's just a great resource for Anchorage, and you know, we wouldn't be Anchorage without it. And
there are very few places in the country anything like it. At Rocky Mountain National Park is probably the only one that I think has some equivalence where you can just drive into the high country and take off in any direction.
Yeah, and it would be great if we were able to, over time, build in a couple more accesses to Alpine. We have the area at Arctic Valley where you can mm-hmm. drive to Alpine and hike up relatively small peaks quickly, and and not much else. Baldy and Eagle River is pretty close. It's sort of Eagle River's flat top, I think.
Well, let's see. Then there'd be Mile High on the Eagle River, and then South Fork Eagle River.
South Fork counts, I guess.
I think there's more of a knowledge gap than there is a number of places to go. I think that the people just think that Glen Alps is where you go, but I think there are other places to go. They're just not very well known.
Not well known, and there may not be very good access. There may be public access, but it may not be,
be questionable.
Might be enough parking, or you end up with conflicts with neighbors. And,
exactly. Blaine, how are you guys dealing with the Glen Alps or issues
well,
up there?
We just opened that a parking lot extension, and so that's I think that's alleviating some of the pressure, not all of it. I was just up there last night, and there's still people parking on the road. It's a problem, but really it's a happy problem to have. I'm always encouraging of people that want to get out and use our public land so close by. It's a much happier thing to have than people sitting at home playing video games, in my opinion. Anyway,
I'm with you. Yeah,
I think and we probably all agree.
So they're out there and they're enjoying the environment. They're getting good views of Anchorage. There's some moderate hiking up there that introduce people to the whole the whole aspect or the whole activity of hiking. This is the first thing they do. They think, wow, it's great, and it launches them.
So the Powerline Trail is, and that must be open to biking, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's totally easy, great skiing, too.
Yeah, great skiing, early season.
And I'm sure John will have the same memory, but growing up in Anchorage, you sort of as a coming of age as an 8-year-old when you first summit Flat Top, it's like, come on, I've made it to the top. It's not that difficult a mountain, but it is there's some scrambling at the top, and I know we've had a few mishaps up there.
Yeah, we sure have.
And what's happening there? Is it people just falling off the rocks in the wet, taking the wrong route, or do you have a feel for why people are getting hurt?
Well, it's a number of different things. It's uncontrolled glissades. It's slipping on wet rock. It's just a number. People just unprepared. So sometimes unsupervised children. They get over a little too close to the edge, and it's always a little easier going up, of course, than coming down. And so people have some issues. But it's just because it's in our backyard, it doesn't mean it doesn't deserve some respect.
Well, it's easy to get off the main route as well, I think, partly because because it's so popular, there have been a lot of informal routes created. And it seems like the main route is probably a lot safer than some of these informal routes.
There is a route up the backside from Canyon Road, that's quite a bit, mellower and safer than coming up the front. But of course the front is the most, you get to it the quickest. It's got the best parking, et cetera.
The backside, let people know how they get there. I think everybody getting to Glen Alps is pretty straightforward. The backside, you go up Rabbit Creek, or how do you get there exactly?
Well, you go up, it'd be Upper Diarmond. And then you turn onto Canyon Road and you go to the end of Canyon Road. And it's quite a rough road at the towards the last there.
And you can park there just on the side of the road.
There's a parking lot at the end, and there's a there's one kind of intermediary on the way to the end there. The gate closes at night, and that's to prevent the shenanigans that we've had happen in the past. So you need to be aware of that and make sure you don't park on the wrong side of the gate and get locked in there.
And it's a popular backcountry skiing starting off point two. Is that they're like peak four, or what's that little peak called there?
There's peak three.
Peak three. Okay.
And I was just thinking of that area that that as an illustrative thing of what I don't know what I think is special about Chugach State Park is that you have Flat Top, which we were just talking about, gets everybody and is great that way. But I was up there just earlier this summer with a guest from out of state, and we went up Flat Top, and then we just went up Peak 2 and Peak 3 and a little beyond. And, you get on Peak 2 and there's hardly anybody, and get on Peak 3 and there's nobody, and you get beyond Peak 3 and there's, really nobody, and you're in the, you're out there in the real wilderness mountaineering, as it were, crossing snowfields and pretty steep ground, and you're still essentially on flat top and just spitting distance from this more or less backcountry mob scene that sometimes flat top is. And it's so easy to go just a little bit beyond the sort of the most common places and get into, as remote an area as you want to be and as much adventure and risk as you want to take.
Yeah, and I think that's really true. And it's easy to do. It's not like you got to go a long way in Anchorage to get by yourself. And the weird thing now is you could stand up on the mountain and like Google where you are, right? You're gonna with your smartphone. That's the crazy part about it. Mm-hmm. So we've been kind of talking about the easy trails, and I want to finish up one more easy trail before we go to the break. And I guess this would be State Park as well, which is a Klutna Lake. Great family. There's really nice campground there.
Yeah. And I'd throw Thunderbird Falls, too.
Oh, yeah. Thunderbird Falls has got to be mentioned.
Yeah.
So Thunderbird Falls, easy to find. You just go out the Glen Highway, and I think there's an exit marked for Thunderbird Falls. What is it, like a mile long?
Yeah, it's just a mile.
Just barely, yeah. And just a nice waterfall turnaround view. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good one.
Yeah, so there's your destination. Yeah, we made it, and the kids are happy, and okay, now we can go back.
Including the lake, you got to go quite a ways to get a destination. But I think you can actually rent a kayak there, rent a bike. It's well developed and easy hiking or biking.
Yeah, and well, it should be noted that there are days when it's open to ATVs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
When it's closed to ATVs, and so depending on your predilection,
Where do you find that information at?
You can call the State Park Office 345-5014. Or it's online. It's on our Facebook page along with a whole bunch of information.
We'll link to that at alaskapublic.org. Hey, thanks, guys. This is going really, really fast. And so we're going to move more into more challenging trails and maybe a little bit more afield in the second half of the show. We're talking today about hiking the Chugach, day hikes from Anchorage. The show is Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. And we've been hearing from John Wolf, who is author of 55 Ways to the Wilderness, Blaine Smith, who takes care of trails for Chugach State Park, and Paul Clark, Trails Program Manager at Chugach National Forest. Stick with us. We're going to be talking more about trails in a little while, but right now it's time for the Outdoor Explorer Calendar. Do you want to try backpacking but worry about carrying a heavy pack? Or are you a backpacker who wants to lighten your load? In REI Anchorage on Thursday, August 1, a backpacking expert will provide excellent tips on lightweight backpacking techniques. Included are shelters, backpacks, food choices, and fuel efficiency. The Lightweight Backpacking Basics course starts 6 p.m. on August 1st at REI Anchorage. Get your rifle sighted in and ready for hunting season at Rabbit Creek Shooting Park on Sunday, August 4th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Gunsmith check, chronograph printouts, and sighting in assistance are all part of this one-day event to help you get ready for your hunt, August 4th at the Rabbit Creek Shooting Park. And celebrate blueberry season at the Alyeska Resort Blueberry Festival on August 10th and 11th in Girdwood. This family-oriented outdoors event features live music, berry picking, local arts and crafts booths, tasty blueberry treats, cooking demos, beer and wine garden, hiking and biking, climbing wall, pie-eating contest, blueberry creations contest, disc golf tournament, kids' activities, and more. I don't know, how could you want any more? So you can find out about all of that at alaskapublic.org. We link everything from our website. Finally, the Crow Pass Crossing is coming up this weekend. To tell us a little bit more about the 22.5-mile race through the Chugach, we have with us by phone Michael Friess, who is the director of the UAA Track and Field Program, which sponsors the race. Thanks for being with us, Michael.
No problem. It's glad to be here.
So this is truly an amazing event. It's almost a marathon, and it's also a wilderness race. And you've got river crossings, you've got steep grades. When people get to the end, they're muddy and they've really been through something. This is like the ultimate Alaska race.
Yes, it's very much adventure running. We start on the Girdwood side of the Crow Pass Trail and end at the Eagle River Nature Center, and in between, you're right, there's a lot of wildlife, a lot of wilderness. You know, the trail is fairly established, but there are times when it becomes certainly a little bit unclear. But thankfully, we've had good events each year, and people might have a little bit of scrapes here and there, but we've kind of never been back safe.
Right, and there's even been wildlife bear encounters and stuff over the years as well, right?
I don't think there's been a year where we have not had, you know, bear sightings.
Wow. So, the Alaska's most elite runners participate in this event, and it's a super competitive event. Is it open to non-elite runners or people who want to get involved, who maybe are not top of the pack?
Well, in terms of whether or not someone's elite or not, that's not necessarily, what our standard is. What our standard is whether or not someone can engage in the event and be safe. So we certainly have qualifying standards, whether that's, a marathon requirement, a half marathon requirement. But even then, we've got some outliers that can show a level of understanding about the event so that when they participate, they can be safe. I mean, certainly, safety is our top priority. And so, there's actually some fairly experienced marathon runners that, might be very accomplished in a standard, city race, but shouldn't run just simply because they're not used to that type of terrain, that type of wilderness, and don't know what to do when they encounter wildlife. So, to say it's elite, it's usually, you better be fit. It's not a beginner's race. It's not somebody who wants to, to have some bravado. We want people who are, really want to engage in it at a high level. But I'd kind of back away a little bit from elite.
Well, I was just thinking about some of our amazing runners, mountain marathon runners, and this is one that they really think about as being something that's very important for them to participate, to compete in.
Yeah.
Well, I think right after Mount Marathon. And some of them right now are just extraordinary. We've got some amazing runners in Alaska right now.
Absolutely. Alaska has its uniqueness, and to see events like the, Mount Marathon and Crow Pass, I mean, those are truly Alaska-style races. Crow Pass is a little bit more of a runner's race than Mount Marathon, but what you have to negotiate is still, pretty stiff on both events.
Yeah. So you have a mandatory meeting, I know, for everybody. Is that where you sort of go through and make sure they know what they're getting into? And
well, anybody who's read our application, it's very, very direct, I guess is the way to put it, because we're not out to offend anybody. Certainly, we're just out to inform people that this is not a race for beginners, and so we need to make certain that they understand that. We do have a pre-race meeting where, I try to get as much information about the trail as I possibly can throughout the summer. Talking with the Park Service, discussing it with others that have been on the trail. I mean, they've got a Facebook page now that people post on. So there's avenues by which to get information. It's usually at that meeting that we give a go or no go on the event. I mean, we've had to cancel it in years past, whether that's from, the forest fires and the smoke issues. So we make a go, no go. We give out our bib numbers there, and we give final instructions about, what the requirements are. And, race day morning, they check in with me. They show me that they have all the mandatory gear that is necessary. And then we fire the gun, and I see them on the other side. There's a couple of spots along the way that we can watch them. They have to get to the top of the pass in under an hour, which should be easily done. But our personnel up there, we want to make sure they get up there in an hour and they look good, because that's our only spot really to turn them around. And then the only other aspect where we have supervision is at the river crossing, where we want them to cross at a specific point. And they get a wristband when they do cross at that point. So when they get to the finish, I know that they handled the course appropriately.
Mm-hmm. And then you just count them when they get to Eagle River, make sure they're all there.
Yep. You know, we do have a 6-hour limit, you know, and so that's the other side of it is that, we don't want to, we want to make sure people are accounted for, but the way that the best to do that is to make sure that people who are in the race are able to do the race. So 6 hours should be, if you're trained and fit and you know the course, you've been over it before, you kind of know what to expect, you should be able to negotiate it in that time. Occasionally, people fall, they walk in, but we keep track of again who starts, so we know who needs to finish. And then, there's every now and then there's a few that do turn around, but usually they get us that information and it comes back to the finish line. So, yes, so we keep our fingers crossed each year, mm-hmm. That is a worrisome point. But, I think we have a system in place that, if we were to need to call out some help, we definitely can do that.
Well, it's a great adventure, and I really like seeing some of these athletes just really going for it and turning in. It seems like the times are getting faster every year, and we've got a real running culture here in Anchorage that's really accelerating, and you guys are contributing to it, so that's great.
Really appreciate that. Again, hopefully we have a full field this year, and we'll see how many shows up to the start line, see how many I scare away at the Friday meeting.
and
hopefully they get theirs and come back safe.
All right. Well, thanks very much for being with us, Michael Fries, from the UAA Track and Field Club, which is the sponsor of the Crow Pass Crossing coming up this weekend. And you'll find a link to the Crow Pass Crossing as well as all the other events we talked about today on the calendar at alaskapublic.org. Just click on our show. And if you have an event you want folks to know about, you can click on community calendar at alaskapublic.org and post your event. Stay with us for the second half of the show when we'll continue to talk about hiking, the Chugach, and elsewhere around Anchorage when Outdoor Explorer continues.
You are listening to Outdoor Explorer from KSKA Anchorage. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and iTunes. To see what's coming up on future programs and add your voice to the conversation, go to alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're back. I'm Charles Wolforth, and today we're talking about day hiking within a day of Anchorage. So the opportunities are so extensive, we're not even going to scratch the surface in an hour. But we're having a really fun discussion about favorite hikes and where you could go depending on your ability level, your desire to get away from people, and a lot of other factors. John Wolf is with me. He's the author of 55 Ways to the Wilderness. Blaine Smith with Chugach State Park, and Paul Clark with Chugach National Forest. We were just talking about the Crow Pass Crossing, and the cutoff is 6 hours to do that 22.5-mile race. I'm thinking, and it goes through the state park and the national forest, I'm thinking 6 hours would be pretty darn fast. How much time would you allow for that Girdwood to Eagle River to do Crow Pass for just a hike rather than a run? A couple of days?
At least, yeah.
Yeah, most folks do it in a couple of days, but of course, light is right a lot of times. And if you go light and you just walk it at a pretty good pace, you can get her done in 10 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it also does make a reasonable 2 or 3 day backpacking trip
with a
couple of nice camps out there. It's a beautiful valley to stay in. And
yeah, a lot of times it is a shame. You see people blasting through, and it is a shame that they don't stop and hang out at the Raven Glacier or up on Heidi's Knob looking up at the Eagle Glacier. There's some really spectacular spots.
So let's orient people a little bit to Crow Pass, how you get to the trailhead. Most people hike from the Girdwood direction, or does it matter?
That's probably equally popular from either side, but from the Girdwood side, you head up the, like you're going towards Girdwood on the Alyeska Highway, you turn left onto Crow Creek Road, and then it's about 5 miles from that intersection where you head up Crow Creek Road, and you'll make it to the Crow Pass Trailhead on the Chugach National Forest side, and you'll wind your way up. It's relatively steep, but it's such a neat experience because you get to blend. As Blaine mentioned before, you're not only blending the amazing scenery of the subalpine and alpine as you make your way up, but you also have real rich history there. You have the Monarch Mine ruins at about a mile and a half or so. And then you also have the one of our 42 cabins, Crow Pass Cabin, up at the top, about 3 miles from the trailhead. And it's fairly strenuous coming from the Girdwood side, about 2,000 feet of elevation gain over 3 miles.
That would be plenty of a hike for a lot of people. Yeah.
Excellent day hike. You see a lot of backpackers and certainly some trail runners that will be heading all the way, but then at mile 4, at about Raven Glacier, then you cross over into Chugach State Park. And one other notable feature is that the Crow Pass, as well as Winter Creek, is part of the Iditarod National Historic Trail, which probably the lesser known part of the trail, because most of us think of the Iditarod Sled Dog Race, but the Forest Service and State Park are working to create a continuous route between Seward and Eagle River, about 180 miles of trail for both summer and winter. So numerous day and multi-day hikes, and Crow Pass is really the end of that if you're starting at mile zero at Seward. So another historic component where you're walking in the footsteps of many, many generations of other people.
So would you go over Resurrection or Trail or Johnson Pass Trail for the southern portion cutting up from Seward? How would that work?
So the Johnson Pass Trail is part of it in the winter. Lost Lake Trail is part of it. The original route, not surprisingly, as most of these transportation corridors have been used for millennia, so the Seward Highway and the Alaska Railroad is actually the primary route of the National Historic Trail, with the Seward Highway being the kind of connecting trail, but the Johnson Pass Trail as well. Mm-hmm. And so we've been busy constructing trails along Turnagain Pass as well, and south of Johnson Pass.
Oh, fantastic. That's exciting.
Yeah.
So we haven't talked too much about the sort of the lung busters, the bring your asthma inhaler type trails. Nancy Pease was on the show last month and said her favorite is Bird Ridge, which you can see because it's just, up. And I guess she set the record in the run there, and she feels very good about that. And that is a really beautiful trail because the views start right off. But it's also pretty challenging in terms of
it just goes up, but it's great because, like you said, the view changes every step, and the view is spectacular. And it's one where you can go, there's false summits and whatever, so you can make your own destination, and you certainly don't have to go to the very back of the ridge, and most people don't, and it's just very good hike.
I don't think I ever have. What happens if you just keep going? Does it end?
Well, I don't know if I ever have either, but I think you can keep going back to the, basically it divides North Fork of Ship Creek from the main fork of Ship Creek back there.
So. Yeah, you'd end up back there, and you'd have to drop down. You'd end up back headed towards the Beak, Bedarka, all those ones, you know, a lesser visited part of the state park. It's great, great wilderness values. I just plug our, you know, just not only do we have, you know, all these great resources so close to the city, that's pretty cool, but we have world-class values, you know, right outside within State Park and the National Forest that, I mean, any place else would be, you know, the praises would be sung from the highest mountaintops. Yeah. We've had at our house, my wife and I have hosted a group from Germany and two groups from Japan that came over just to hike Crow Pass Trail. I mean, they saw the pictures of that, and it and they're beating a path to our door because we have some really high value wild lands.
I know, we're very spoiled. I wrote a book about national parks, went all over the country, and you know, came home and said, why go anywhere else? You know, it really is amazing. And that what we've got would be a national park anywhere else. It's just that we've already got so many national parks. We don't need any more.
Well, and the thing about a place like Eagle River Valley is that the scale of the mountains there is, you know, is world class, even though the tops of the mountains aren't necessarily all that high. But they're high enough because the river is like around 500 feet if you're at the Eagle River Nature Center, and the tops of the peaks are above 7,000. And that's just, those are world-class mountains anywhere, and that relief. We were up on Eagle River Overlook, accessing from South Fork of Eagle River just last weekend, and looking over into Eagle River Valley, and it just from that vantage point, you can just see how much of a canyon it is, and it's, you know, it is really beautiful.
That's a great hike, for day hike, to go up the South Fork. The trailhead has been fixed up. It's very, very nice.
Yeah, and thanks.
Then you go up the river and get to the lake, and it's just gorgeous and a pretty not too steep, really. I think most people could do that.
A lot of that trail, you know, what we're trying to do within the park is we're trying to, you know, there's this thing called the recreational opportunity spectrum, and we're trying to manage our trails so that there we have, you know, so high quality entry level trails. You know, our goal is to make our park friendly to the population that lives nearby. And it makes us happy to see people out there using the park. And we want some trails to be in such a condition that we can have families and older people and people that haven't experienced hiking to be able to get out. And South Fork is a good example of you know, lessening the grades, making the tread surface a little bit nicer. And people are able to, you know, use that trail. And we've had a number of people that have been complimentary, saying, you know, hey, my 75-year-old father came up. He wanted to go someplace where he could see a real, you know, typical view of Alaska. We went up the South Fork. He did great. He loved the hike. Thanks. And so that makes us feel good. And not that every trail needs to be that way, but there are a couple where they can get out and really, you know, see beyond the houses and the congestion and... that's pretty cool.
And one that brings to mind where that both options are available is in Hope, starting, I think, from it's called the Porcupine Campground, which is one of the most beautiful campgrounds in the Chugach National Forest. Overlooks Turnigan Arm, and then there's a fairly level trail which goes out to
Gull Rock.
Which I don't know if that's a bikeable trail, but it's pretty level. But then there's also a very steep trail, which I've never actually done, but I've heard it's pretty challenging, great views. And what's that one called?
Hope Point.
Right, Hope Point. That's called Hope Point Trail.
I think they've both gotten work recently. I think Hope Point might be being worked on this summer, Paul.
Yes, Hope Point Trail is being reconstructed, making it a little bit less difficult. It's still... gains elevation quickly, but it's meant to be, as Blaine mentioned, just, you know, a little more what we would say is a sustainable trail, that it's we'll see less soil erosion, and should just be more durable in the tough conditions of Alaska, freeze and thaw. But heading up Hope Point Trail, then up at the top, it's really majestic views back of Turnigan Arm. And again, getting up into the alpine, but also a lung-burning, thigh-burning hike up to the top of Hope Point.
So you go there. Those who don't want to do that can go out to the Gull Rock Trail, and those who want to do the workout can go up. Let's get it. We took nominations for the best sort of easy kid trail. What's the toughest, most challenging trail in our area? Pioneer Peak?
To do in a day?
Yeah.
And if you're talking trails,
are you talking about a 24-hour day? Or
that's right.
Well, yeah. you can add whatever provides us to it you want.
I would definitely put Pioneer Peak Trail right in there You know, it just goes up and up and up, you know, constantly, which isn't so bad on one side. The real thing is you have to go down and down and down for 5,000 some vertical feet just consistently, and you got to have knees for that. Mm-hmm. But boy, is it beautiful. You know, you just get these big views of Knik Glacier and the inner Chugach, the Mount Marcus Baker, the highest peak in the Chugach at, 16,000?
I know, 13.
Somewhere in there.
13.4 or something, yeah.
High, anyway.
High.
Where's the trailhead?
It's off the Knik River Road, off the old Glen Highway. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of going up Knik River a little ways, and then there's a little parking area there. And I actually haven't been on it for a while, so I'm not sure what its current condition is. It's easy one to get overgrown, but it's a beautiful
not bad.
Trail.
Yeah, you can keep to the trail pretty easy. It's out there.
How much time would you allow for that? Would you get out there early in the morning?
Yep, just all day, unless you're a mountain runner that could really just
unless
do that quick.
Unless your name is Strabel, right?
Yeah, somebody like that. But it's a way to get to the top of, not to the very top of Pioneer Peak, but the sort of summit of Pioneer Peak, which is...
You'd really have to be a mountaineer to go to the top.
Yeah, right? It's a lot of people want to have rope to go to the top of the true summit.
Mm-hmm. But you know, that's a fairly iconic peak, again, with world-class proportions from sea level to...
It's like
6,000
6 grand, vertical right there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you see it in all the photos from the Matanuska Valley, and it's great to get up there and see what it looks like looking down.
So one of the things is that we get, if there's problems with that trail, we'll get complaints about it sometimes, but it's a Matsuburo trail.
Oh,
it's,
really?
It's not a Chugach State. It's just on the outside of a Chugach State Park, and it's in the Matsuburo. And it's not managed by Matsu State Parks either. It's a borough trail.
Well, it's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about day hiking from Anchorage, hiking the Chugach. John Wolfe, author of 55 Ways to the Wilderness. Blaine Smith from Chugach State Park, and Paul Clark, Chugach National Forest. In the few minutes we have left, we've talked a little bit about trail improvement, trail maintenance. I would think that all of these trails would take quite a bit of work to keep them in shape. I mean, let's start with you, Paul. I mean, how much work, how big a cruise, how much effort and money is going into this annually? Or do they take care of themselves?
No, they don't. They definitely don't take care of themselves. There's just with runoff, anything close to creeks or rivers, we see had several flood events over the past couple of years. And so we... in the context of the trails that we've talked about today, we have offices in both headquartered in Girdwood and in Seward in the Kenai Lake area. And so the bulk of our trails are on the Kenai Peninsula, Resurrection Pass Trail, Johnson Pass Trail, those long system trails. And right now, I'll say we're fortunate to have a relatively strong trails budget on the Chugach National Forest, and we invest about $700,000 a year in trail maintenance across the entire forest, mm-hmm. to manage those 500.
And then mostly seasonal employees that are doing this kind of work?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We usually have... trail crew supervisors that are permanent seasonal employees that will work half the year, two-thirds of the year, and they'll be managing 1 to 4 crews of seasonal temporary employees that some come back year after year because of the amazing landscapes, everything that we've talked about, the wonderful lifestyles that we get to lead.
And they don't have to have a gym membership if they're out trail building all summer, right?
No, no. And we have also, especially over the last 4 or 5 years as part of our Chugach Children's Forest Initiative, our partnership with Alaska Geographic, we've really worked hard to try to create opportunities for youth crews.
Mm-hmm.
Alaska Department of Natural Resources has a student intern program crew that we've hired for a couple years, and Student Conservation Association. In fact, we have two crews of Student Conservation Association, SCA, interns working out at the Spencer Whistle Stop. Mm-hmm. So we have 6 miles of trail there that's a wonderful mix of easy and difficult trails that I hope...
You have to get there by train. I think we need to do a show on that whole program in the future. Blaine, what about you? Do you have a good-sized trail crew out working? Do you need volunteers? Do you use volunteers?
Well, we have a lot of different opportunities to work on trails. Let's see, how can I say this? But the state, we've got about 250 miles of trail, and there's some, things being the way they are, we've got about, I think this year, not including my salary, about $35,000 for trail crew work. So there's a lot of stuff that we're not able to do. But what we do, we try to bring it up to, you use the word, Paul, sustainable, specifications. We're hoping that we'll be able to run, this year we're running four crew members on our trail crew, and they're out there working hard and getting quite a bit done. But it looks like next year we'll be able to hire a few more, and so we're hoping to build and start, really delivering the trail system that I think that most Anchorage folks would enjoy. But that being said, it's a great job. We get to be outside and do a lot of work, and we're open to volunteers. A lot of times we have them just thrown with our crew. And they can go out, any day of the week that the crew's out. There's also opportunities to adopt a trail. And then there's also opportunities to do special projects. And the only thing that we ask is that if they're coming in to do a special project, that we can pre-train the leaders as to kind of some of the specs that we want mm-hmm. for some of these jobs.
Yeah. No, I can imagine, especially on a sunny day, it would be definitely a very good job.
Oh, yeah. No, none better.
Yeah.
Well, maybe than yours, but I doubt that.
But we're indoors, right? That's the problem with this job. If we could get these microphones outside, it would be perfect. Yeah. Well, I want to thank each of you guys. John Wolf, author of 55 Ways to the Wilderness, also involved in the Alaska, the Huts Project. What is it called exactly?
Well, Alaska Huts for short.
Alaska Huts. And we'll link to that at alaskapublic.org, and we'll also link to all the other stuff we've been talking about. If people want more information. And also want to thank Blaine Smith from Chugach State Park and Paul Clark from Chugach National Forest. And so that's it for today, but we're always looking for ideas and guests for our show. You can help us build Outdoor Explorer by finding us on Facebook and pitching in with your thoughts. A number of shows and guests have already come about because of reader suggestions. Listener suggestions. I know we have a great outdoor community in our listening area, and we want to be a resource for you, so just connect up with us on Facebook. That's it for today. Kristen Spack is our producer, Dave Waldron, our audio engineer. My name is Charles Wolfworth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Outdoor Explorer and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.